All right, so let's jump into a case that really makes you kind of rethink how you approach contracts, especially when you're dealing with, markets that are a little bit volatile. We're looking at Rockland Industries, VE plus E, US Inc., a case from back in 1994.
Okay.
That, believe me, is still incredibly relevant today.
Oh, 94. All right.
We've got a whole stack of legal documents here, court transcripts, some industry analysis from back in the day. And our mission is to, really extract those key nuggets of wisdom that you can actually use in your practice. So picture this: Rockland Industries, a company in Maryland making drapery linings, suddenly facing a major dilemma. Their primary source of antimony oxide, that's a crucial fire retardant for their products, dries up because of a global shortage.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine the scramble to find a new supplier?
Yeah, absolutely. And what's fascinating here is that this wasn't just like a small supply chain hiccup. We're talking about a worldwide antimony oxide shortage. I mean, Rockland was under some serious pressure to find a solution, and they needed to do it quickly.
And they do, right? They managed to secure a contract with Manley Reagan Chemicals for three containers of this, much needed antimony oxide at a fixed price. Sounds like a lifesaver in a crisis, wouldn't you say?
It definitely does. But as we often see in these cases, there's a twist. Manley Reagan's own supplier, who was also hit by this shortage, they couldn't deliver. So it's this domino effect that ends up landing Manley Reagan in hot water because now they have to, break the bad news to Rockland.
Oh boy, I bet that did not go over well.
Yeah.
So Rockland's back to square one, still desperately in need of this antimony oxide. What do they do?
Well, they're forced to basically just scour the market, right? Buying antimony oxide from a bunch of different suppliers. And of course, at significantly higher prices than their initial deal with Manley Reagan. So naturally, this leads to a lawsuit. Rockland sues Manley Reagan for breach of contract.
Okay, so we've got a classic breach of contract case brewing. What's Manley Reagan's defense? Did they just say, oops, sorry?
Not quite. They invoke the defense of commercial impracticability, essentially arguing that this global shortage was something that was beyond their control. They essentially claimed that, hey, our hands were tied because our supplier bailed, so we shouldn't be held liable.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable on the surface. I mean,
Yeah.
how could they have predicted a global shortage?
Right. And that's where the court really starts to kind of dig into the details. Going back to all that research that we have, it turns out that this global antimony oxide shortage wasn't some like sudden unforeseen disaster. It was a known issue within the industry. The market was volatile and everyone was aware of those risks.
So the court basically said, ignorance is no excuse.
Essentially, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the court's message was very clear. If you're operating in a volatile market, you need to kind of anticipate these potential disruptions, right? And you need to have safeguards in your contracts. Manley Reagan should have taken some steps to mitigate their risk, maybe, diversifying their supply chain or including certain clauses in their contracts to specifically address supplier failure.
This is a huge takeaway for our listeners. Don't just assume things are going to work out. Your contracts need to be your shield in these, these unpredictable situations. Now, the court ultimately finds Manley Reagan liable for breach of contract, but how do they actually calculate the damages? This is where things get really interesting.
Yeah, you're right. This is where those frantic higher price purchases by Rockland really come into play. The court uses a specific calculation known as cover damages, and they basically look the difference between the original contract price that Rockland had with Manley Reagan and what Rockland actually ended up paying those other suppliers to get that antimony oxide.
So they're not just throwing out like a random number. It's directly tied to Rockland's actual losses,
Yeah.
because of the breach. What was the final figure?
Well, the court awarded Rockland a substantial $56,945.08. And this amount, it reflected the real financial burden that Rockland had to shoulder because Manley Reagan couldn't fulfill that contract.
Wow. That's a significant hit to Manley Reagan's bottom line. I imagine Rockland felt a little bit of vindication after all of that scrambling and extra expense.
Certainly. But there's one more twist in this legal tale. The court denies Rockland's request for prejudgment interest. Now, this might seem like a minor detail, but it really reveals a lot about, the intricacies of these damages calculations.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Why did the court deny that prejudgment interest?
Well, Maryland law, which governed this case, is very particular about prejudgment interest. It's typically only awarded when the damages are a fixed, predetermined amount, what we call liquidated damages. In this case, because the damages were calculated based on Rockland's cover purchases, which weren't known beforehand, the court considered the damages unliquidated.
So even though Rockland won a substantial sum, they missed out on that additional compensation for the time value of money. It's a reminder that even when you win, there could be these unexpected nuances based on the specific laws of the jurisdiction. But before we, get too deep into the weeds of damages, I want to step back and look at the bigger picture. This case, with this global shortage, this frantic search for a key ingredient, it feels eerily familiar, doesn't it?
It really does. It's remarkable how relevant this case from 1994 feels in today's world. You know, we've all seen how global events, from pandemics to geopolitical tensions, they can really wreak havoc on supply chains across almost every industry. And this case serves as a timeless reminder of how crucial it is to anticipate these disruptions and have strategies in place to mitigate those risks.
It makes you wonder if businesses today have learned from cases like Rockland v.E+E. Are they better prepared to handle these sorts of disruptions?
That's the million-dollar question. I mean, there's definitely more awareness now about these supply chain vulnerabilities. But whether that translates into better contracts and better risk management, well, that's what we need to explore further.
Okay, let's do just that. We've got a lot more to unpack here, from the nuances of this commercial impracticability defense to the impact of market volatility on contract law in general. But before we do, let's take a moment to just really digest what we've learned so far. What stands out to you about this case? What are some of the key takeaways for our listeners, especially those working with businesses in these potentially volatile sectors?
I think one of the most striking things about this case is just how much it emphasizes the importance of, really thorough due diligence and being proactive about risk management. You know, Rockland Industries, they found themselves in this really precarious situation because their supplier was so heavily reliant on this single source for antimony oxide.
So you're saying that even if a company itself isn't directly exposed to a single point of failure, it's still really important to look deeper into, their supply chain.
Exactly. It's like peeling back the layers of an onion,
yeah.
Right? You need to understand that whole ecosystem, right? The one that your suppliers operate in, just so you can fully assess those potential risks.
And how can businesses actually do this in practice? I mean, it sounds like a lot of work, especially when you're dealing with these really complex global supply chains.
It definitely requires some effort, but it's an investment that's worth making. Mm-hmm. There are a number of tools and strategies available, things like supplier questionnaires and on-site audits. There's even sophisticated supply chain mapping software that can help you identify those potential vulnerabilities.
So it's not just about trusting your suppliers blindly. It's about actively engaging with them to understand their own risk profiles.
Absolutely. And this kind of ties into another crucial takeaway from this case, the importance of clear communication and transparency in those contractual relationships.
Yeah.
If Manley Regan had been a bit more upfront with Rockland about, their own supply chain dependencies, maybe they could have negotiated some alternative arrangements or at least included some provisions in that contract that address those potential disruptions.
It sounds like this case is as much about communication breakdown as it is about an actual breach of contract.
That's a great point. Often these legal disputes, they arise not from, some kind of malicious intent, but from just a simple lack of clear understanding and communication between the parties involved. This case is a good reminder that building strong, transparent relationships with your suppliers and making sure that your contracts really reflect those shared understandings can go a long way in preventing this sort of costly litigation down the road.
Okay, so we've talked about due diligence, risk management, communication. What other lessons can we glean from this case, especially, for those who are drafting and negotiating these contracts?
Well, this case really highlights the importance of just considering those what-if scenarios when you're drafting those contracts. What if your supplier can't deliver? What if there's some kind of sudden spike in prices? What if a natural disaster, ends up disrupting production? By anticipating those potential risks and including provisions that actually address them, you can create a much more robust and resilient contract that protects all parties involved.
So it's not just about stating those terms of the agreement. It's about thinking ahead and planning for those unforeseen contingencies.
Exactly. And this kind of leads us to the concept of what are called force majeure clauses. These clauses, they excuse a party from performing its contractual obligations when certain extraordinary events occur, natural disasters, wars, or in some cases, even severe supply chain disruptions.
Now, force majeure clauses, These can be kind of tricky, right? There's a lot of debate about how broadly or narrowly they should be interpreted.
You're absolutely right. Force majeure, it's a very complex area of law, and courts often really scrutinize these clauses very carefully. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just some kind of get out of jail free card. The parties still need to show that, you know, that the event was truly unforeseeable and that they took reasonable steps to mitigate its impact.
So it's not enough to just like throw in some kind of generic force majeure clause and hope for the best. It needs to be tailored to the specific risks and circumstances of that transaction.
Precisely. And this is where having experienced legal counsel can be so invaluable. You know, a skilled lawyer can help you draft those force majeure clauses that are specific, enforceable, and provide the right level of protection for your business.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here, from due diligence and risk management to the nuances of these force majeure clauses. But I want to kind of circle back to something you mentioned earlier, the concept of cover damages. It seemed like that was a really, really pivotal element in Rockland's victory.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of walk us through like how these damages are calculated in practice?
Certainly. Cover refers to the buyer's right to purchase substitute goods when a seller breaches a contract. It's a fundamental principle under the UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code, which governs most commercial transactions in the United States. And cover damages, they're designed to put the buyer back in the position that they would have been in if that contract had been fulfilled.
So it's about making the buyer whole. It's not about punishing the seller.
Right. Exactly. The goal is to compensate the buyer for those actual losses that they've suffered, you know, resulting from that breach. Now, in the Rockland case, the court, they very meticulously reviewed Rockland's cover purchases, ensuring that they were reasonable and necessary given the circumstances. And then they calculated that difference, right, between the original contract price and what Rockland actually paid to secure those substitute goods. That difference, that $56,945.08, that became the amount of damages awarded to Rockland.
So it wasn't just a hypothetical calculation. It was based on Rockland's real-world expenses, you know, those that they incurred as a direct result of Manley Reagan's breach.
Precisely. And, you know, the courts focus on those actual cover purchases. That really underscores the importance of documentation. Rockland had meticulously documented all of their efforts to secure those substitute goods, and that proved crucial in proving their damages.
This is another key takeaway for our listeners. Documentation is king. Keeping clear and detailed records of all your transactions, your communications, and your expenses. That can make all the difference in a legal dispute.
Absolutely. And you know, beyond documentation, this case highlights the importance of just understanding the UCC and its provisions on remedies. The UCC, it provides a really consistent and predictable framework for resolving these commercial disputes. And knowing how to navigate those complexities, you know, that can give you a really significant advantage in negotiations and in litigation.
Okay, so we've got a lot to think about here. Due diligence, risk management, communication, force majeure, cover damages, and the UCC. It's a good reminder that contract law, it isn't just about like abstract principles. It's about understanding how those principles apply in real world situations, which are often, you know, messy and unpredictable. But before we get too overwhelmed, let's kind of take a step back and look at another really fascinating aspect of this case. The court's decision to deny Rockland's request for prejudgment interest.
Yes, that was a curious twist in the case. It really delves into the intricacies of how damages are actually calculated and awarded in these legal cases.
I'm all ears. Walk us through that rationale behind that decision and what it means for businesses who are seeking to recover damages in these breach of contract cases.
Well, the court's decision to deny that prejudgment interest, it really boiled down to like a technicality in Maryland law. You know, prejudgment interest, it's essentially like an extra sum of money. It's added to those damages that are awarded to the winning party, and it's meant to compensate for, you know, the time value of money, the fact that a dollar today is worth more than a dollar, you know, tomorrow.
So it's like acknowledging that the winning party has been, you know, out of pocket for that period of time.
Yeah.
And they deserve to be made truly whole.
Exactly. But here's the catch. Maryland law at the time only allowed prejudgment interest on what are called liquidated damages. And these are damages where the amount is fixed, right? Mm. And it's easily determined from the outset. It's off, you know, specified right there in the contract itself. Think of it like a predetermined late fee.
Okay, so in this case, because Rockland's damages were based on those cover purchases, you know, those frantic higher priced buys that they made to replace that antimony oxide that wasn't delivered, The court didn't consider those damages to be liquidated.
Exactly. Yeah. The actual amount of those cover damages, it wasn't known until after Rockland had actually made those purchases. So, you know, they weren't like a fixed sum from the get-go. So the court saw them as unliquidated damages. And under Maryland law, pre-judgment interest, it wasn't an option.
So even though Rockland won a pretty substantial sum of money, they missed out on that little extra bit of compensation for the time value of money. It all seems a little unfair, don't you think? I mean, especially since, you know, they had to scramble to find that antimony oxide. They incurred all these extra costs.
Right.
All because of Manley Reagan's breach.
I understand why it might seem unfair, but, you know, this really highlights a crucial point for you and for all of our listeners. These state laws can have, like, these subtle but very significant variations, and they impact how damages are actually calculated and awarded. And what might seem like a technicality, you know, on the surface, it can have some real-world financial consequences.
It's a good reminder to always be aware of that specific legal landscape that you're operating in. Don't mm-hmm. assume that what applies in one state will automatically apply in another.
Absolutely. And, you know, this case also kind of underscores, I think, the value of just, you know, really careful contract drafting. You know, if the parties had anticipated these potential supply chain disruptions and maybe included, you know, a provision in there for liquidated damages in their contract, well, Rockland could have avoided, you know, this whole issue with pre-judgment interest altogether.
That's a fantastic point. It's not just about, you know, knowing the law. It's about actually using that knowledge to craft contracts that anticipate those potential problems and very clearly define those remedies that are available. It's like building a legal safety net for, you know, for all of your business dealing.
Exactly. You know, taking a step back from, you know, the specifics of this case for a second, let's think about what this tells us about the bigger picture, you know. The relationship between contract law and this market volatility that we see. We've seen how a seemingly simple breach of contract played out against this backdrop of a global supply crisis. Do you think that courts today are more attuned to those market dynamics when they're deciding contract disputes?
That's a really great question. I think there's definitely a lot more awareness now, right? About how interconnected those global markets are and about the ripple effects that these disruptions can have. And I think, you know, courts are increasingly taking into account those broader economic factors, right, when they're interpreting these contracts and assessing those damages.
I agree. I think the days of viewing contracts in isolation are really over. Courts are recognizing that these contracts, they exist, you know, within this very, very complex ecosystem of supply chains, market forces, and global events. And, you know, this case, even though it's from 1994, I think it really foreshadowed this shift in thinking.
It's a reminder that the law, it isn't static, right? It's constantly evolving to reflect the changing realities of the world around us.
Yeah.
And for those of you who are listening, especially those who are working with, you know, with businesses that are operating in these volatile sectors, well, understanding those evolving legal landscapes, it's crucial.
Absolutely. You know, this case, it's a treasure trove of practical insights that go way beyond, you know, the specifics of antimony oxide and drapery linings. It's a good reminder to be proactive,
yeah,
to really do your due diligence, to communicate clearly and to craft contracts that are as resilient as the businesses that they govern.
Well said. We've covered a lot of ground today unpacking those legal intricacies, the practical implications, and even, you know, the subtle but significant role that these state laws play. If there's one message to take away from this deep dive, it's this. Don't underestimate the power of a well-crafted contract. It can be your shield in times of uncertainty and your roadmap to success in this, you know, this volatile world. What are your final thoughts for our listeners before we wrap up?
I think this case, you know, despite being decided nearly three decades ago, it really speaks volumes about the, you know, those timeless principles of contract law and about those ever-evolving challenges that businesses face in this globalized world. You know, it's a reminder that we need to approach contracts with both a deep understanding of the legal principles and a keen awareness of those dynamic forces that are shaping the marketplace. And as always, having, you know, skilled legal counsel by your side, well, they can make all the difference.
Excellent advice. I hope our listeners are walking away from this deep dive feeling empowered and informed, ready to tackle those contracts with confidence and newfound appreciation for the nuances of this, you know, this fascinating area of law.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us in this journey through Rockland Industries VE plus E. And until next time, keep those legal minds sharp and those contracts ironclad.